In this episode of Movie World, as we talk about Avengers Infinity War, Solo, A Star Wars Story, and Deadpool 2. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And here's Dee as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. We have a heavy dose of sequels this week.
Sequelitis.
Well, I was going to say sequels or spin-offs or franchises.
Superheroes.
And two of these movies... Oh, that's right. Well, Solos, depending on your point of view. Two of these movies have colons in the title. I'm stretching to make links here, but they're all like big franchises.
Kind of linked,
like,
yeah.
Spin-offs. Part of what we've been complaining about to some extent, that these are always the big things. You know, we have Marvel with its Avengers, seemingly infinite movies. And since Disney acquired Star Wars, we're going to be seeing a lot more. I'm all for jumping right into our reviews.
Let's probably have
a lot to say about these movies. So, shall we start with the big one, Avengers Infinity War?
Sure.
Okay. So the Avengers and their allies must be willing to sacrifice all in an attempt to defeat the powerful Thanos before his blitz of devastation and ruin puts an end to the universe. So this is directed by Anthony Russo and Joe Russo. And this actually has, I think, something like 14 credits for the writing, because this has
How
the
is
entire.
That even possible? It's like a page.
Because it has entire Marvel character universes all thrown in the blender. So written by many, many, many people, and it stars everyone and their mother, including Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Don Cheadle, Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Holland, Chadwick Boseman, Zoe Saldana, Karen Gillan, Tom Hiddleston, Paul Bettany, Elizabeth Olsen, Anthony. I could literally go on. There's pages and pages and pages of people in this movie. But don't let me distract you
Gwyneth
about
Paltrow
how I might be
there.
Feeling Chris about Pratt, this movie.
Josh
Many
Nolan
people. William Hurt, yeah.
Idris Elba.
Zoe Saldana.
William Paul Hurt. Bettany.
Okay, I said I wasn't going to say the names. That didn't give you guys carte blanche to say the
Bradley
names as well.
Yes.
We get the point.
Vin Diesel, okay? I think that's everyone.
Actually not.
So he is Groot.
Yes.
So
Yazdi, kick us off.
So gosh.
And it's probably been a while since you saw this one, right?
Yeah, it's been a while since I saw this one. I just want to declare my superhero fatigue. I just came out of this movie saying, oh God, I don't want to watch another one for a long time. Having said that, I think one of the biggest issues with the Avengers movie, including the very first one, which I still think is the best Avengers movie that was made, is that, you know, each of these individuals on their own headline a big action superhero movie. And now you're throwing all of these people together. And how do you balance, you know, Iron Man versus Spider-Man versus the Hulk versus Thor versus, you know, gosh, you know, 10 other superheroes. And the first movie did a very good job with it. And the second one, not so much. It kind of felt like a parade of...
Age of Ultron,
where people came and went. This particular movie, I think, to their great credit, and the movie actually, I was shocked because I didn't know about this, but actually the movie, like, they didn't have enough superheroes in the Avengers umbrella. Now in this movie, they have the Guardians of the Galaxy join them as well. So, you know, we have Chris Pratt's...
And Black Panther,
you know, the Lord, and, you know, Zoe Saldana, and Groot, and...
Raccoon,
and everybody's in this movie. So considering how cluttered it is with heroes, I think the movie script does a fairly remarkable job where different groups of superheroes are kind of tasked to deal with certain pieces. And towards... This is a long movie, towards the end of the movie. So... you don't, at least I was not actively thinking about, oh, you know, is Thor getting more screen time than Captain America or any of that. I mean, I think it did a reasonably good job of balancing, you know, all the different players. That's about all I can say in terms of generosity. I just, you know, there's a lot made about how the movie plays out in its last act, which really didn't do much for me one way or the other because I...
It's, well, I mean, let's just put it out there.
Yes.
It's half a movie.
It is half a movie. So it's very much in that, you know, Lord of the Rings situation where, you know, they're halfway through the journey and the credits.
Or Harry Potter. Or, yeah.
Halfway through the journey and the credits come up.
Yeah.
People were like aghast, like, oh my God, how could this be happening to, you know, these people who we have always thought as being, you know, invincible and immortal and not vulnerable at all. And, you know, what's going on to them? For me, it just seemed like I've absolutely no doubt that, you know, they're all going to be back pretty soon, you know, that it, purely for commercial reasons. I mean, Marvel is not going to let any of the, sorry, any of these superheroes kind of perish away.
But you don't know, Yazdi.
I don't know, yes. So, I don't know. It was okay. I didn't love it. I watched it. It was fine. It was too long. I hope I don't see another Avengers movie for at least 2-3 years from now.
The part two is coming next year.
Okay, Joe.
You know, I've not been the biggest fan of the Avengers series. I mean, I think the first movie worked very well for you two in particular, and I was a little less, I enjoyed it a little less, but... One of the things I admired was that even though it had these five characters, or six characters, I forget how many there were in the original Avengers movie, they all had their own little arc. They all had their own little place in the story. This movie is so chock full to the brim, as you said, Yazdi, of characters, of, you know, franchises and superheroes from other films that... It's very hard for any of them to breathe, and consequently, I feel like this movie, this franchise, has taken a turn away from the mainstream and more for the fans. Like, I feel like unless you're completely embroiled in this universe that is Marvel, it becomes a little bit confusing and messy. And I actually found myself, it's a very long movie, and I actually found myself kind of tired of it all, probably at the halfway mark. I was really like... Just get me out of here. You know, I'm actually bored. And it's not to say that the movie isn't well crafted and the dialogue isn't funny and that the action sequences aren't nicely directed. And it was just, there is so much going on that I couldn't latch on to anyone in particular to kind of, you know, root for them. I'm rooting for the universe. You know, clearly, you know, I don't want the world to end. But I didn't see anyone's particular journey here that... So I really struggled to like this one, and you know I can see that it's doing very well critically, but I really feel like I'm just too far from this universe. I'm not trying to piece together the connections from one movie to another. Yeah, I think there's just too much in it. And one of the movies that we did watch on the plane, Rashmi, was
Ragnarok. Yeah,
was Ragnarok, which, you know,
so good,
isolates a character,
so good,
and you know. Has its own kind of
sense of
tone to it. Yeah, yeah, it's a very, very funny movie. This was just, you know, it was too much stuff in the soup.
Yeah.
That was you know, my overriding.
Yeah, I agree with you both. Look, I think we're all fatigued at this stage by this universe. Who's in this, rather? Who isn't in this? What happened? What's the story about? I couldn't even tell you. This has so totally evaporated from my mind. Other than that final scene. And I think it's because I was so happy that we got to the end and I probably wanted to pee or something. I think this is just twaddle at this stage. It's entertaining in the moment if you want to waste a few hours, but it's so, so disposable. And they're almost like infomercials for the one-off spin-offs. Yeah, and I was going to say the same thing, Joe. You know, I found Ragnarok so entertaining, also because it's written by Taika Waititi, who I love. This is packed so full of so many characters that you just lose track of what's going on. But it doesn't even matter because you don't have to remember. Like, who cares? I just felt myself being so indifferent to the whole thing.
And that's, I mean, sorry to interrupt, but it's the who cares, because I didn't. And
yeah.
That's so important in a movie about superheroes.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, love what it is that they're trying to do, the fight that they're trying to fight the good fight. But I couldn't.
But what is the fight now? What is the fight, and who are they fighting against, and who's aligned with who? And it's just too complicated. I mean, again, that's not to say it's a bad movie. It's just not something I can hang my hat on anymore.
Yeah, and I think all of these movies, all of these superhero movies, they're almost always as good as their villain. Right? Because they need, I mean, they are superheroes. They need an adversary who can kind of,
rally them together.
Or put their superheroes to the test. And I haven't read a single Avengers book growing up. I grew up in India. We didn't have the Avengers. Marvel just completely bypassed India, seemingly. Mm-hmm. So I don't know the mythos. I don't know, Thanos is very, very sacred to a lot of people. But just watching as an outsider, I did not understand why his powers were so exceedingly great that, 20 superheroes could not contain him. And I just...
Because he has all the Infinity Stones.
Of course.
Come on, Yazdi.
but even before he gets all the Infinity Stones, he is just untouchable, undefeatable. Yeah. And we've had those kinds of villains before, and they have prevailed. It seems like any ingenuity or any cleverness on the part of the superheroes to kind of, bring down their villain is absent. It just seems a little bit grim to me.
Well, yeah, we haven't figured out the weak spot, right? Because every villain always has a weak spot.
Work so well, especially the first one, is the fact that they have to work together as a team.
Correct.
To overcome the odds. Like, individually, they can't do that. But this, you're right, Yazdi, this guy is so omnipotent here that he's godlike, and so it does almost feel like, there is no point to the story. And
I think the other thing is, plus he's so CGI'd that it's hard to be frightened of something that's generated by a computer, in a sense.
I think that's been talked about in the context of this movie. I didn't have a problem with that per se. I mean, I still very much saw Josh Brolin behind the mask.
Oh, you did?
I couldn't.
No, I mean, I don't think I knew it was Josh Brolin going into it, but I think, at some point in the movie, it kind of clicked. Of course, that's Josh Brolin. And, we saw him today in Deadpool as well.
Which
we'll talk about as a bad guy here. But, the live version of Josh Brolin. These two villains seem very similar to me in terms of flavor, and I think that's just the actor's personality coming through. But I didn't have a problem with him. So you didn't like his CG-ness? He didn't cross the uncanny valley for you?
No.
Okay.
No. I was just like, someone write some code and probably kill him off.
Yeah, and I think he seemed to me to... as all powerful as he was, he seemed to me rather one-dimensional. I mean, for me, the Joker in the Chris Nolan movie, right? That to me is the ultimate bad guy.
Yes.
I mean, even now we remember him.
Or Darth Vader.
We remember him because there is a backstory to them. There is a pathology to why they want to be so evil.
Right.
There's something. Thanos just shows up and he's like, I'm greedy. I want all five stones and then I can control the world and nobody can touch him. And it's like, oh, boring.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The motivation is not clear. I know there is a motivation. It's around, he wants to get rid of half of the population, to make room for the rest of the population, right? Which is an interesting political and relevant political argument to the way that we live today, right? Right. As kind of inhabitants of the earth and using its resources.
He thinks he's doing good.
Yeah, possibly. But it's not clear.
Right, which goes back to my point that this feels like it's taken a turn towards the esoteric comic book world, right? The ones that The three of us, none of us really were into comic books. You know, I think, you know, we maybe not the Marvel universe, right, or the DC,
correct,
universe,
yeah,
the American comic books. So these stories lack a certain power with us because we don't have the history. We don't know the stories and the characters and who they are. And I think, like I say, Marvel feels like it's going down its own little rabbit hole of making this for the fans, which is great, but they're still being sold to the masses. And I feel like if you're not intimately involved with this universe and these characters, you're going to start to struggle to understand what everyone's particular role and need is. And, you know, they're doing that with spin-off movies, but it's gotten a little bit dull. So
yeah,
I'm going to wrap it up if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
I think it needs to be said that this movie is only half a movie. So, you know, do understand that going in. I think I hope that's not considered too much of a spoiler, but I think it's been talked about a lot. And that in and of itself left the movie feeling somewhat unsatisfying. But the movie, to me, has real problems in terms of how much, you know, they're stuffing into the sausage casing here. And I think, you know, it's not to say it was poorly crafted in any way, but I can't say that I enjoyed it to any large degree at all. So it's superior to Age of Ultron, but I'm going to give it the similar score, which is 5 out of 10. I was really disappointed with this. I was actually bored. I even said that to you, Rashmi, as I left the theater. I was like, I was actually, you know, like waiting for it to end, which you should never, ever feel in a movie of this sort.
I'll go next. What Joe said, but I'm going to give it 4 out of 10.
Brutal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I keep going back to...
I'm sorry. I'll just add, look, yeah, if you're a fan of this universe, you're going to go and see this regardless of what we say.
These are review-proof movies.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I keep going back to The Dark Knight, right? In The Dark Knight, there's this...
What? Yes, he's defending Nolan.
Yeah,
oh my, sure, God, what's happened?
But if you're going to deal with like...
Joe, your plan has worked.
No, if you're going to deal, right, with a gritty, heavy, serious kind of treatment of this material, you should have the weight to carry it off. Like, I remember when I was watching The Dark Knight, when the Joker was, you know... When he was kind of dispatching his evil into the world, it was hurtful because it felt real. And there were very key characters in the Batman universe who were dying. He was tricking them to make these horrible moral decisions, and he played against their head, and he kind of, you know, and I was hurt, and I was so invested, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. None of that happened for me in the Infinity Stone or Infinity War or whatever it is. I was just like, okay, fine, you know, whatever, you know. I'm sorry. I'm just very exhausted. It's a well-made, well-crafted film, it no is, question yeah. about it. And like I said, it's good that everybody has something to do. They're all kind of balanced equally, but it's just too much at this point. 5 out of 10.
Let's move on. Let's do a Marvel sandwich and have maybe Solo in the middle as the filling here. So
okay,
I'll do the
introduction.
Yeah. Yep. Solo, a Star Wars story. I should correct myself.
Solo, a Star Wars story. Yes.
Yeah.
Or a Star Wars film. A Star Wars.
A Star
movie.
Wars Solo colon a Star Wars story.
Not a semicolon. A full colon.
A full colon. There. Okay.
Solo gets the full colon.
Okay, so just like the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe that we just visited a few minutes ago, just like the MCU is planning world domination, so is Disney Lucasfilm with Disney recently purchasing all rights to the Star Wars franchise and intellectual property. Disney Lucasfilm has also been planning their world domination with a continuing saga of a new generation of Star Wars heroes. And they're led by the new generation, led by Rey, Rylo, Poe, and Finn, played by Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac, and John Boyega. And those movies are coming every other year. They usually come around the holidays every other year. And they are very smartly in between throwing in these what I call Star Wars adjacent films. You know, they are kind of in the same universe, but they're not exactly part of, you know, the timeline or the plot line for the entire series. And so we had Rogue One 2 years ago, and now we have Solo. And Solo tells the origin story of the beloved, one of the most beloved characters in the Star Wars franchise, which is Han Solo, very famously played by Harrison Ford. This particular installment is written by Jonathan Kasdan as well as Lawrence Kasdan, and the director is Ron Howard. Now, this movie had a bit of an interesting backstory, which most people know about, that initially Marvel had handed over the reins for making this particular movie, the Han Solo origin story, to Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, the directors of the Lego movie. And most, I think, like 4 to 5 months after shooting, like when much of the principal photography had been done, there was a falling out between the directors and the studio. And so the two directors were kicked out, and they brought in Ron Howard to kind of fix things, which is a very unusual choice. You know, you wouldn't think to bring Ron Howard in to make this giant, big, franchise movie, although he's made his share of big films, Apollo 13 and so forth. So Solo now, in its current version, then exists movie directed by Ron Howard, and it stars Aiden Ehrenreich. Did I say his name correct?
That'll do. We know who you mean.
Okay. playing Han Solo, and he's paired off with Emilia Clarke, she of Game of Thrones, as his love interest Kira, and then Woody Harrelson here plays a character called Beckett, and Beckett seems a very strange name in the Star Wars universe. I hope he has a weird first name. Anyway, Chewbacca is here. Chewie is here. Yes, and we also have Donald Glover, who plays a very young Lando Calrissian in this movie. And then Thandie Newton is here, and then Paul Bettany plays the bad guy, Dryden. So in terms of the story, this is like the origin story. We find out that Han has been living on this particular planet, and he attempts an escape. And during an adventure into the criminal underworld, he meets his future co-pilot Chewie and encounters Lando Calrissian years before joining the rebellion. So the backstory to Han Solo is here. What do you guys think about Solo?
So can I suggest that Joe does this review totally as Chewie? Because he does a really...
you need to do a little... as well.
Because you do a really good Chewie impression, Joe. Okay, so I've been anticipating this movie for a long, long time. I think I posted some stuff on our Movie Wallahs Facebook page as the trailers were being released. I was really excited to see this origin story, and directed by Ron Howard, who I think is a good director. Unfortunately, I found this so incredibly dull and pointless. Oh. I was really disappointed.
Joe, how were you really disappointed as well?
Look, I mean, the Han Solo character has, it's kind of rich for plunder, right? He's such a
likeable rogue.
Right, but you also know that Han Solo, even in the very first movie, you can tell that this is a guy that has lived. He's lived a life that has not been a straightforward life. He's borderline, you know, criminality, although he seems to have a code of ethics that, you know, allow him to differentiate right from wrong, despite the fact that he does some roguish type stuff. And I feel like they left such a lot of potential untapped here. I mean, look, the movie's adequate entertainment in the moment, but the Han character here, you know, constantly proclaims how good he is without really ever demonstrating that, and I can see that this doesn't feel very much like a Star Wars movie either. I mean, I think the thing that struck me Rashmi, we happened to we went to a noodle bar yesterday, and they happened to have Star Wars playing.
A New Hope, the very first one.
The very first one, playing on the screen with subtitles. And I hadn't noticed this before, but there's a line that Han Solo delivers in the very first Star Wars, which essentially suggests that he has had no exposure to and has absolutely no belief in the Force. Mm-hmm. So as a consequence, this movie totally sidesteps this whole like thing that's so essential to in my mind to the Star Wars universe, of this concept of, you know, good and bad, and this, you know, this Jedi type mythos that has been there in every movie, Rogue One included. So it didn't feel very Star Warsy to me. So it was okay. I mean, the movie didn't bore me, but I just felt like it was such a missed opportunity. I want to see more adventures of Han and Chewie, but I had hoped that they would maybe, you know, had focused on a bit more of how he got to the man that he became before A New Hope, right? I wanted it to lead us all the way up to that, and it didn't. And it's like, dope.
Maybe they're saving up for Solo 2, which wouldn't be Solo anymore.
Duo.
Duo.
Do over.
Oh,
go, Yazdi.
I liked it. I don't love it. Like, I don't love it like how I loved The Last Jedi or The Force Awakens. I really love those films.
Rogue One?
Yeah, I like this one almost as much as Rogue One.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
I have no problem with any of them. I think they made a very deliberate, at least when Phil Lord and Chris Miller, when they were in charge of directing the movie, I think they made a very conscious choice that the movie was not going to be a larger than life, big, you know, life and death, people fighting with, you know, lightsabers kind of movie. They decided it was going to be more of a fun action film, which would have a lot of humor in it. And there is, I can still see kernels of that humor, you know, strewn throughout the movie. And just like Thor Ragnarok has so much giddiness and fun in it, I think that was the original, origin of this particular movie. But then there was a falling out between the directors and Kathleen Kennedy and, you know, Jake and Lawrence Kasdan, you know, who wrote the script, that they pulled them out, and then they brought in, you know, Ron Howard. And I think Ron Howard took a much more, you know, middle of the road kind of approach, right, to the whole movie. So what it lands up becoming is the kind of action film that you see just for fun. So I think if you go see it as expecting a big Star Wars movie, it'll be a disappointment. I at some point just settled in and said, this is a very well-crafted action movie. It's just a series of heists. That's all the whole movie is, you know, right from the beginning. And I liked how tight the movie is. I liked how, you know, it's a short film. It goes by very quickly. I liked how there is enough, you know, double crosses and triple crosses and so forth built in. I saw comfort in seeing, you know, Woody Harrelson. We need to talk about this, but I thought Donald Glover as Lando was just ridiculously good.
Yeah.
So I agree, it's not a quintessential Star Wars movie, but I think what it has going for it ultimately won me over. I did enjoy it.
So I think that's what I took away from it. Donald Glover just has oodles of charm. And if this had been his movie, I think that would have actually been a better movie.
Correct.
And L3, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who plays L3, if this had been a movie about them,
right,
I think that would have actually been the better movie.
But, Rashmi, I think it kind of was, because I think it was them plus Kira, played by Emilia
Clarke.
Right,
but the movie's called Solo.
But no, that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think, sorry to interrupt you, but again, just to kind of capitalize on that point, it felt like it was a movie about them. For a movie that was called Han Solo, or Solo, a Star Wars story, I didn't feel like that character went anywhere at all in the movie. The story of Kira, on the other hand, was really, really well done. And I think as the movie ended, she is the one that has remained in my mind as being, you know, the more interesting story that we see, you know.
Right, because she's not, we haven't seen a direct good or bad in her, right? She's kind of that middle of the road character.
There's much more to the story of Kira in this movie than there is to Han Solo. And therein lies a disappointment. I think the Han Solo piece is underdeveloped.
Right. And I think, again, that's where I had the problem. Emilia Clarke, for me, she's a great Daenerys Targaryen on Game of Thrones.
Khaleesi's
wife.
Oh, okay. What do I know?
But she just seemed...
Dragon mom.
Yeah, dragon mom. But she just seemed like a cardboard cut out in this. I mean, she has no emotional depth for me. And I just feel like this should have been someone with a lot more...
Did we see the same movie?
Emotional heft. This was a cardboard cut out for me.
She didn't do much for me. I mean, the character is wonderfully written.
Yeah.
And the character has a great... you know, it has the arc is there in her character.
Yeah. I loved her in this. That's
but
funny.
I thought she was very.
Do you watch Game of Thrones, Yesti?
No.
Okay. I don't either.
I'd seen her in that god awful Terminator sequel.
Yeah.
But she was perfectly okay. But I think somebody else, like I'm thinking, God, a Kristen Stewart or you know, what's her name from Room?
Brie Larson. Yeah,
somebody could have taken this role and just kind of
because it's a complex person, right? She's someone who is inherently lived a real life. Like this is what I think I took away. She's the one who's really lived the life, and now you know he's come back for her, and she's no longer the person that she was when he left, in a sense. Yeah, I think you're right. They shouldn't have called this Han Solo. If this had been called something completely different...
If it had just been called
something else, right. A Star Wars story like Rogue One was, right. And we had a bit of the Han Solo origin story in it, that would have actually been a much better movie, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Donald Glover just... takes this character and brings
so charming.
He's
a scene stealer, but he brings so much nuance to that character. I mean, I was wondering about. There's this one scene when he leaves and he has his eyes locked with Han Solo for entirely too long. Like before they say goodbye, they kind of look into each other's eyes for like 6 seconds, and I was like, what's going on here? And I think there's little touches, and he is. So full of flourish, and he's so full of cocky swagger, but his cocky swagger plays into his character as not the only defining factor, whereas it does for Han Solo. So I mean that Lando character is so, I don't know if it's him as the actor or if it's just written that way, or maybe it's just his wardrobe or whatever. He just every time he comes on the screen, it's like, you know,
or his card playing skills.
Card playing, it's so much fun.
See, this is the problem. I think there's no arc or character journey for that Solo character at all. Nothing changes.
That's my point.
That Solo character is the same at the beginning and same at the end.
That's my point, and that's exactly what I was saying about the Emilia Clarke Kira character.
Yeah,
you know, she is far more interesting. So.
I mean, the one commonality in all the Star Wars movies has been this eternal tug and pull and push of, you know, the good side and the dark side. And every character struggles with it, every single character. And in this particular movie, the only character was Kira's character.
Yeah.
So, and maybe the point is that, you know, Han Solo is not a very exciting character. Maybe he's just, I mean, he's very exciting as Harrison Ford plays it, but he's one note. He's meant to be this rogue who, that's who he is. He's a rogue. He doesn't have a complicated pathology to it. I don't know. I'm not trying to defend the movie, but the other thing I really liked is the entire movie, maybe they did this intentionally so it wouldn't play well if you try to watch a pirated DVD at home. The entire movie is very, very dark. It's only in the latter, like maybe the last half hour of the scene of the movie that, you know, a lot of shot in brightness. But at least on the original planet where they are, there's these blues and reds and so forth. And it has this murky kind of Blade Runner kind of cinematography, which I really appreciated. I really love, there is this middle action set piece, which is set on this train, which is moving through the...
Yeah, that was thrilling.
And the train kind of is made of these horizontally stacked cubes, which can turn, you know, as the track changes.
That was inventive.
That was very well done. That whole set piece was a lot of fun. So I almost saw it like... you know, again, I was speaking with Beth Accomando, and she said that kind of reminded her of watching Saturday morning cartoons. And it kind of has that feeling of, you know, a kid watching Indiana Jones or a kid watching, and it's not trying to be more than that, maybe. So I really appreciated the action, and I loved
Woody Harrelson.
I love Woody Harrelson, but I love Thandi Newton. You know, Thandi Newton has a short role. She was Woody Harrelson's love interest.
Sidekick,
And then Phoebe Waller-Bridge was really good.
She stole the show for me.
Not as funny as the droid in Rogue One, though.
That
was a very funny, quippy droid in Rogue One.
Yeah, I agree. But this was great.
Sure,
And I love Lady Proxima, who you see at the very start. She's the shrimp-like creature who rules the planet. Where?
I don't know. It was like a Jabba the Hutt, you know.
As a shrimp.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Jabba the Hutt had been on a diet.
And transgendered.
Now it's Lady Proxima. But anyway.
Okay, let's wind this one up. I haven't got anything more to say on this one. I mean, I'm hovering between a 4 and a 5. Oh. 5 out of 10.
Having beaten the movie up for not being what I wanted it to be, which is always a terrible perspective to come from as a reviewer, I'm going to kind of temper what I've said with the fact that I did enjoy the movie in the moment. So I'm going to be very generous to this movie. Give it a 7.
Yeah, I'll give it a 7.5. And I'm going to decide before I finish the sentence whether I'm going to change it to a 7 or an 8. But I really like that, for example, the iconic, you know, Star Wars movie, Star Wars music, the theme doesn't show up. The first time it shows up in the movie is when, you know, Han Solo meets Chewie and they give each other a hug. And that's when you hear that iconic music playing, you know, so there are...
Rogue One didn't do that either. If you remember, there's a credits rolled. There was no John Williams score.
So, I mean, they've deliberately decided that these Star Wars adjacent movies will not have the John Williams score. And I think they are allowed to use, da, 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 you know, just very sparingly. And they used it at this
point. That's the Empire.
Yeah, thing, I know.
But
I just wanted to sing it.
So it's, like I said, I just saw it as an action movie. I had a great time with it. I enjoyed it. I expected more from Alden Ehrenreich, who's so good in Hail Caesar. You know, somehow he seems burdened by having to play this, you know, this very, very iconic character.
I think he's underwritten. I don't think he does a bad job with what's there. I think he's just underdeveloped.
Yeah.
I don't know what more he could have done.
But again, see what Donald Glover did with his character. I don't know. And he made a choice to very deliberately not imitate Harrison Ford, which I don't know if that's so smart, because I it would have been good if, you know, pieces of him sounded like him. But all that aside, had fun, 7 out of 10, which mind you, I'm bringing down from a 7.5. It's an enjoyable movie.
Okay. Let's go back to the Marvel Universe then with the movie Deadpool 2.
Stop about superheroes.
I think this is our last superheroes last one. For a while.
Then we have a cerebral episode coming up.
And then we have Ant-Man and the Wasp opening next week.
Right.
Anyway.
Oh, gosh, yeah, we do. Oh, my word. I guess it's summertime. You know it's here. Yeah. So, Deadpool 2, this is a sequel to the movie Deadpool from a couple of years ago now. And that movie, I remember, kind of came from nowhere. It's not a very well-known. I think it's kind of an esoteric little Marvel character that they resurrected here. And the difference, obviously, with the Deadpool movies and the rest of the Marvel series is that this is completely unashamedly hard R-rated. It's not aimed at the younger audiences. I think that's somewhat confusing for those of us that kind of see Marvel as a family-friendly franchise. And I'm certainly sure that there are more than a parent or two that took their kid to see the latest Marvel movie and regretted it within the first couple of minutes. Nonetheless, with Deadpool 2, this being a sequel, everyone knows what to expect. And this movie is directed by David Leitch, who is known for the John Wick movies.
And he also directed Atomic Blonde.
And Atomic Blonde, that's right. Yeah, I think you thought that movie was terrific, right? Yes.
I marveled at the ability of this spy to change in bathroom toilets.
Yes.
That's what I took away from Atomic Blonde.
So this movie, I'll just read its description here on Rotten Tomatoes. So after surviving a near-fatal bovine attack, a disfigured cafeteria chef, Wade Wilson, struggles to fulfill his dream of becoming Miami's hottest bartender. What on earth are they talking about here? While also learning to cope with his lost sense of taste. So this clearly is written to trip up the likes of me, because this isn't what this movie is about at all.
That's very funny.
It is very funny. So that's what I'll say. Deadpool 2 is essentially the sequel to The Foul-Mouthed, very funny, quippy superhero movie of a couple of years ago. It stars again Ryan Reynolds, and this time he's joined by Josh Brolin, rejoined by Mirena Baccarin. We have... who else here? There's a slew of folks playing
the kids from Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yes. Indeed,
Julian Dennison as kind of the plot interest, I guess. He's not. I was going to say
who
love
gets
interest.
The movie going, yes.
I'm going to stop there before I trip myself up anymore, thanks to this little pricey that they've given us on Rotten Tomatoes, which has nothing to do with the movie at all. So. Guys, what did you think of Deadpool 2?
I hated it. I hated every minute of it. I couldn't wait for it to be over.
Did you like the first one?
I loved the first one.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. I loved the first one. I was offended. I was bored. I was like, you can't take magic from the first movie and force it to happen again in the second movie. It just did not work for me. And I can tell you more. I really passionately hate this film.
Really?
Yes.
I was going to say, after the boredom of the Avengers Infinity War, my disappointment from Han Solo, A Star Wars Story, I was delighted to watch this movie. What a sassy superhero movie. The opening scene was such a homage to Kill Bill and Tarantino for me. It's funny, witty, tongue-in-cheek, a little bit too much smart talking, and I think so much dialogue that I was just exhausted by the end of it a little bit. I think it's a little bit too slapstick, and it just sits on the right side of slapstick. I think any more slapstick, it would come off being more like an Airplane or Police Academy spoof-type superhero. But all in all, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was very funny.
This movie just suffers from that dreadful disease, sequelitis. I think it's often said to be half as well received, it's got to be twice as good as the first. And this movie definitely suffers from that because I was actually a little fatigued by the joke by the end of the first movie. I mean, Deadpool to me, being the foul-mouthed R-rated superhero, was very self-conscious as a movie, entirely, you know, too self-conscious. And this movie still suffers from that. I mean, you know, to the extent that it's clearly written with this idea that everyone's game, you know, Ryan Reynolds pokes fun at himself more than once in the course of this movie as Ryan Reynolds, not the Wade Wilson / Deadpool character, which, he stops short of breaking the fourth wall, you know, that kind of...
It's very meta, very meta, yeah.
The whole thing is got that. So, you know, this was more of the same, but more of the same is like your second helping of, you know, foie gras in the same meal. It's like, I'm over it now and I don't need to have another... It's not going to hit me the same way that the first mouthful did. So, look, it's entertaining for sure, but can it be Can it have the impact that the first one did? Certainly not. So, you know, yes,
kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, I guess. How we felt about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, yeah.
I need to understand from Yazdi
why you hated it.
You reacted so badly to this and you liked the first. Like, to me, they're literally a continuation of the same script.
Because the first one was kind of intelligent in that all the dialogue was, you know, it was coming from a place of being too smart. And this one does the same. I don't have any problems with the dialogue. I just think the plot is just offensive. It's like this little kid he's trying to save, and then his wife dies, and then maybe he dies, but he doesn't. And, you know, there's this, what's that creature? Which, I'm just sick of these stupid plastic creatures. The Colossus shows up. And then there's
Juggernaut
shows up, and they're just doing silly things. There was a 10-minute sequence where this metal creature fights with this colossal Juggernaut creature, and I was like, "What am I doing here? I mean, it was so boring. It's like, do at this point, does anybody care about two C-grade, you know, superheroes in the Marvel universe fighting a CGI fight? I don't know. And then I will give you this much. The movie's throwing so many pop culture references at you, right? Constantly it's throwing at you.
That's what I actually thought Joe would have a hard time with.
So it's fine. And I think just by referencing something, just by referencing Celine Dion, doesn't make it inherently funny. You have to have a joke. And I think there are three or five really good jokes there. There are some three or five really good jokes there. But the rest of it is just referencing what happened. Like, there's a reference to John Wick in one of the credit sequences. Okay, so the credit sequence is truly smart. But as
the man who killed the dog, written by the man who killed the dog.
And so it's very clever, but I just got tired of, you know, this guy who is like, you know, mourning his wife who's died away, and he doesn't have purpose, and a kid helps him find purpose. It just sounded too generic. It felt like some, you know, interns at the MCU just put the plot together. I don't know. I really, maybe I was just too tired.
Watched it after Solo, right? So you watched Solo and then you watched Deadpool 2.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it may have suffered for that because of that. Again, to me, this was just a continuation of the same thread of humor that we've had before. And again, I think the reason it was so impactful first time round is It was somehow bringing something fresh to you. We're talking about comic book fatigue. This brought something that we hadn't seen. You know, again, I think the two of you like Deadpool a lot more than I originally did. I kind of, you know, again, it was one of those movies where I was like, okay, I get that this is, you know, foul-mouthed superhero, but, you know, now that joke is tired, and I want to have a more of a fun movie. But it just felt like more of the same, so it's interesting you reacted so differently.
Yeah, not much more to say on this one. You know, I think Ryan Reynolds, I think, excels when he gets to be the smart-talking, sassy-mouthed character. And I like that he laughs at himself. And he commits 100%. Mm. I mean, look, I can wind this one up. I think it's really fun and enjoyable. I think it could have been cut by at least 20 minutes. And actually, one of the scenes I would have cut, Yazdi, is the one that you mentioned, between the two, you know, C-level CGI characters. But I think it's worth every penny of your theater price. I give it, I think, a solid 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm clearly the outlier here because I'm seeing the tomato meter is 82%. And I even had a problem with Cable, the guy who plays the bad guy in this particular movie. He just seemed kind of...
Well, I couldn't figure out if he's Thanos. He's like, not. If he's the same character. Because I thought I even heard Ryan Reynolds say the word Thanos at one point. Okay.
That's a joke because it's the same...
Oh, it's paying... Okay. It's
Josh Brolin is playing...
Right, okay. Okay, fair enough.
You know, and God knows I'm the world's biggest defender of Ryan Reynolds. I think he's a really good actor. I think he's very charismatic.
Yeah.
He doesn't get a good deal. But he is his best when he tends to be when he gets the chance to be the smug, fast-talking.
Yeah.
That was his thing. That's Van Wilder. That's how he got famous, you know, being this, you know, smug person. And he, I mean, he has written, he has writing credits. And I have a sense that he kind of put in, threw in as many gags as he possibly can, as many jokes, as many
references. And I think self-deprecating ones.
Correct. But I just got exhausted with the path the movie was taking. I didn't care for, like, him weeping about his wife and... You know, and then that whole thing at the end, which it does exactly the same thing that Infinity War did, which is like, it's a spoiler, so I won't say it. You know, about the outcome of certain people, and right. It's like, you know, whatever. I really liked Zazie Beetz, who plays.
Yeah, she was great.
She was excellent. You know, who plays
Lucky.
Lucky.
Domino.
Yes. Domino, she was excellent.
She was excellent.
And then there's this gag in the middle about them trying to get together their own little. C-grade, you know,
X-Force.
X-Force, yeah. And, you know, how the fate of many of those. That was kind of mildly funny, but I don't know. I think the last half hour, I just wanted to run away. I don't know why. 4 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It was just too much. I was like, this is pointless. I hope there isn't a Deadpool 3.
There will be.
Oh, God.
And all I'll say is, if you enjoyed the first one and your name is not Yazdi, you will probably get some similar level of enjoyment from this one. Again, you know, the first movie annoyed me with its self-conscious humor. This one I felt a lot less annoyed by, simply because I understood that that's where this movie was going to be coming from. So, you know, it's entirely too clever for its own good. But that's the shtick. That's the thing that is what brings people to see Deadpool. So... gosh, how do I rate this? You know, a movie that generally I enjoyed, but I don't think was anything to fanfare about. I'll be generous. I'll give it a 7 because it was probably better than the other two movies of the week that we've reviewed here in terms of the extent to which I enjoyed it. So 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I think there's actually something we haven't spoken about that's in this movie, which is a very almost political, socio-political message about orphanages and what goes on in them. And we haven't even mentioned that because it's almost, it's like a byproduct, right? It's like a side
character. It's a throwaway line.
It's a throwaway line, but actually that's quite, actually the reason why the protagonist, the boy who he's trying to save is kind of behaving the way he is. So I think that's a bit difficult, sure. In a sense.
Sure.
But
and I you know, that kid from
Hunt for the Wild People.
Wild People.
Great, yeah, great little actor. Yeah.
He
annoyed you.
He never clicked with me in that movie and didn't click here either. But anyway, there was this whole thing where he goes to the, where they both go to the prison.
Uh-huh.
Which was just pointless to me. Anyway, we'll wrap up. I'll see it on a better day, maybe. And I'll change my mind. But for now, it's 4 out of 10.
Okay.
And you spotted Brad Pitt, right?
I did.
I did not. No, where was he?
Well, we'll...
Oh, okay. Oh.
He was the Vanisher. Yes, let's just give that one away.
Okay. Sure.
It's just like for half a second.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this one up. We've been babbling on for an hour here, so let's...
Has it been an hour?
Yeah, it's 52 minutes.
Oh, so my God.
If you're still with us, thank you for listening. Until well our next done. Podcast, yes, too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.